Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Here's to good friends.
Cheers.
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 That's sort of an oaky afterbirth.
What was that?
She did tell me to get a beer and some cheese fries over at Eskimo Joe's.
That's very nice, lovely. I only hope you feel this way when I'm done. Because I could destroy this night in 2 seconds.
Why is that funny?
Well, I think it's a bit funny to be trying to define nothing.
Smooth as a bourbon on a summer day. Strong as a peated scotch in the winter night. This is a fair warning. The Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Slap some bacon on a biscuit and let's go. We're burning daylight.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here sitting with David Niles in studio. Juan on the buttons. We got Jim doing audio checks, making sure that no one busts in as our bodyguard. He has done so far. He is 100% like 100% effective.
Yeah. And I'll just tell you guys, he's a dangerous man. Okay.
He's impressive.
He had military helicopters flying over his house today. Military helicopters don't fly over your house for nothing.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Jim, why don't you go ahead and give them your address?
So they know who to watch out for. Jim Spencer.
Dave, this is a part two. When's the last time we did a part two? It's been a while.
Have we ever done a part two?
I feel like we have.
One?
Yes, we have. I know for
consensus?
Sure we have.
Okay. Well, then I have no idea. Because
I know for sure.
I don't remember it.
We did a Theology of the Body with Father Chris Trashko.
Trashko.
Part one and a part two.
Big fan of Krupnik.
Big fan. Yes, he is.
Yes. And not just because he's Polish. That would be, if that's why you think you're
wrong. You're wrong.
Racist?
No, I don't know. We're not going to go there.
I don't think you can say that because Polish is not a race. It's a nationality.
Okay. Well, this is the
people get confused about that sometimes.
We're not talking about that. We're going to pick up. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, we're talking about discernment of spirits. This is part two. Go back and listen to the first part if you haven't had a chance to listen to it. Cause,
part trois?
Cause is we're that,
gonna, Juan, how do you say two in French?
Deux.
Deux?
Deux.
Part deux?
And we're doing something a little different today.
I say that because we have a French beer in front of us.
Yeah, courtesy of Juan. He gave us the idea the other day. Like, we've been doing a lot of whiskeys. We have not been doing a lot of beers.
He, like, was trying to guilt trip us into doing more beer.
Which I'm not.
I love beer.
Yeah, I'm pro that. So we're going to try a beer, and I have never tried it before. I picked it up. I thought it was just kind of... It's Duchess de Bourg... go. How'd you say it, Juan? But Bourg.
I don't know.
It's like
bologna or something.
I don't know. Anyway, it's definitely not bologna.
Bourgogne.
Bourgogne.
Bourgogne here. Yeah. I just remember when he said it kind of sounded like booger in here. Mm. Like with a French.
Bourgogne here.
With a French accent.
So it's a red ale. Flemish red ale.
I guess it is red. When you hold it up to the light, it is red. It didn't look red. But it's hard sometimes, honestly, to tell colors in here because we have these bright lights. It's like we have the sun in here shining at us, and that's the only light.
Like, you can kind of see it.
See, red. When you hold it up there, it is red.
It looks red.
When I look at it right there, it looks very brown.
Yeah. So we're gonna try the beer. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. And we have them in our new Catholic Man Show beer drinking glasses, etched with lasers.
Laser etched with lasers. With check lasers. That out, y'all.
You can pick that up.
That's a very classy item.
Yes. Look at the drinking vessels that we have on the Catholic Man Show. Glencairn glasses, beer glasses, rosaries, shirts, hats, hoodies. We got a little bit of everything.
We have everything that you need Catholic Man Show to tell other people that you're a Catholic man. Just by looking at you, I tell you, I can smell it.
Very
the smell,
it's good.
I can smell it. It is a sour. And you mentioned that before we were.
It's just tart. It's not necessarily sour. It just has a little tartness to it. It doesn't make your like lips pucker like some sours do.
Right.
It has a little.
But you can smell that there's a little bit of like
it's cherry,
grapefruity, or what something.
I think it's cherry.
Yeah, it's probably the red then.
But yeah, it's really good. It's not bad at all.
Oh.
It's very delicious. Oh, yeah, I can do that one. Yeah, no problem. Definitely worth... I don't remember how much it is, so I can't say it's definitely worth... I think it was about $3 a bottle.
Okay, that's expensive.
So that's expensive.
That is an expensive beer.
But it's pretty good. It's a nice treat. It's 6% ABV.
Okay.
So, anyway...
How many calories?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't even keep count.
I'm honestly glad they don't put that on beer. Like, I don't want to know.
Mm-mm.
Don't even tell me that.
We haven't had a lot of beers
really nice.
Recently,
this is like a special occasion. Sorry, Juan. You need a bottle opener. This is a special occasion beer, definitely.
Mm-hmm. It'd be better, I think.
It is just nice.
Better suited for the summertime. It's more of a summer beer, I think.
You think...
Dude, Dave, can I tell you...
See, the thing is, I don't get down with that kind of line of thinking. I will drink any beer or any whiskey, any climate.
So I have something I'm going to give you guys at the end of the show. I smoked a pork shoulder yesterday, and I tried something different, and I'm interested to see what you guys think. So here's what I did with this pork shoulder. I'm going to tell you really fast. I smoked it on my smoker for about four hours or so. I pulled it off the smoker, put it in aluminum foil, and then I drizzled honey over the top of it. I put brown sugar, and then I cut up a stick of butter into little slices and put it on top, wrapped it tight in the aluminum foil, and put it back on the smoker for another about 4.5 hours. It's really good. I've never done that before. I typically leave my pork shoulders on the smoker for all 8 to 10 hours, however long you smoke
it. Right.
But I was reading recently on a guy who swore by it, and I was like, I'll give it a try. It's not, you know, that's what I love about smoke. Like, if you're going to, like, jump into smoking meats, I strongly suggest doing it with pork shoulders because, one, they don't take near as long, they don't cost near as much, and they're pretty foolproof.
As opposed to brisket?
As opposed to, like, brisket or other kind of meats. Okay. Any kind of beef is going to be more expensive. Yeah. And it's kind of foolproof. Like, even if you don't...
Yeah, I mean, the pork is so good. Pork is just delicious. It's got a great fat in it. Mm-hmm. So if you just cook it, it's going to be great. Even if you take a pork butt and do nothing to it,
right,
and you just cook it,
it's going to be good.
It will be delicious.
I injected it. I don't always inject my pork shoulders, but I did this one. I injected it with red wine vinegar, apple juice, and Worcestershire sauce. Like, mixed together. And I thought that was pretty nice. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. It was a lot of new things whenever I was doing it. But that's why, again, I suggest a pork shoulder if you're trying new things out, because if you don't like it, it's okay. It was only $13. It wasn't $113 like a brisket would be or something like that. You know,
what is it?
Some of them, like if you get a big brisket, it's really? Like $80-$100 for a full one.
Like $10 a pound.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's expensive.
I'm gonna be honest. When I go and like grocery shop, I have no idea. I just don't even
pay attention to what prices.
I don't.
Are.
I just like buy it. I mean, I shouldn't do that. But that's why I don't grocery shop. Also, so
right. Anyway, I'll let you guys try.
I still wanted to, because when you told me you were doing this, I had the idea. I mentioned it on the phone. It's like take that brown sugar and all that stuff, and pull the pork. And then just put the brown sugar in at the end. I think that would be delicious.
I don't think it's going to be bad.
Right.
Now, I will say, I don't know how much the butter helped. I know that it didn't hurt. Okay. You know, like,
it's definitely not hurting.
Right. So, anyway, it was pretty good.
Butter ain't hurt nobody.
I brought it over to my parents' house tonight for dinner, and they thoroughly enjoyed it. So
Nice.
Not the best one I've ever done, but definitely one I will do again.
This beer, I just keep coming back to it. It is so good. It's not what I expected, and it's not like, it's not typically what I would say, ooh, this is my style of beer. Mm-hmm. Okay? But I like how it starts off sweet and then quickly hits you with a little, it's like a sweet tart, kind of. It doesn't taste like a sweet tart, you know? If someone told me, hey, this beer tastes like sweet tarts, I'd be like, yeah, that's okay, I don't want it.
Right.
That's not what this tastes like. But it hits you with the sweet and then the tart, and it's just a little bit tart. Like you said, it's not so sour.
And it's not heavily carbonated either.
You're right.
A light right. carbonation.
Well, look at the head Jim got on his. I tried to get more, and I didn't.
That's good. Yeah, so anyway. Man, last week we had over 6 hours of recording. For the very first time we've ever done that in 1 week.
And we'll be probably doing the same thing this year.
Yeah, or this week. Yes.
This year. Yeah, this week.
Yes. So we've been doing a course with Carlo Broussard on St. Thomas Aquinas' Five Ways. We've jumped into basically the introduction and the first part of the first way.
Yes.
And tomorrow we'll be doing the second part of the first way. And it's been
prima pars, prima pars.
Secunda. Secunda.
That's what we've
pars.
Done.
Yes.
We've done.
Yes. Yes. The second part, or the first part, is what we're doing tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we've gotten great feedback from our patrons. People have thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I know that it's been beneficial
for
me.
It, yeah.
To learn and pick Carlo's brain, it's been a lot of fun. If you want to go check those out, they will be forever available to our patrons. If you go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow, you'll be able to listen to those. It comes with handouts that are. Way yep. more than what we could even get
yeah,
through.
Yeah, and we're only two episodes in, so if you want to go become a patron, you can watch those videos and get on the bandwagon with the rest of us.
Should be a lot of fun. So when we get back, we're going to jump into the topic, since we've already kind of started this topic last week, as we were talking about Discernment of Spirits, a book by Father Timothy Gallagher. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan, Juan Posada, and Jim Spencer in the house. We are doing part two of The Discernment of Spirits. The man gear, what continues to be the man gear, because this is part
week.
Two, yeah. Is this book right here, The Discernment of Spirits, by Father Timothy Gallagher, subtitled An Ignatian Guide for Everyday Living. I really love this book. I said it on the last episode. In fact, if you haven't heard our last episode, I think it would be beneficial for you in having context, because we're just going to assume today that you heard last episode. This is a podcast that's available on the internet. Just go listen to it,
right,
and then come back and finish this one. But just the way that these 14 rules by St. Ignatius made them so practical. You know, they're for just you and me, you know, regular people. And then in this book, Father Timothy Gallagher breaks them down using real life examples. It just, you're not going to not understand the rules or the application of them.
Nice.
Yeah.
This segment of the Catholic Mantra is brought to you by the Catholic Woodworker. Go to thecatholicwoodworker.com. Use promo code TCMS for the Catholic Mantra, and you get 10% off all of your purchases. That includes rosaries, home altars, their traveling altars, the crucifixes, heirloom quality stuff. If you use TCMS, it lets him know that we sent you. He continues to support the show. It's a win-win for everybody. You get 10% off. So go to the Catholic.
You get something really cool too.
Yes. So go to thecatholicwoodworker.com.
Okay. Right. So let's just jump into it because the last episode we went way past our four segments. And so
yes. It was one of the longest ones. I like opened it up and I realized, oh my goodness, we have like almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
I cut it down though because I realized we kept recording after we were really done.
Oh, okay.
Which was nice because I was like, glad I didn't just export it and just sent it off.
So there are 14 rules. We made it through 7 last time. Mm-hmm. We're going to make it through the final 7 this time.
Okay.
And once again, we're not going to backtrack. We're just going to carry on. So rule 8.
My wayward son.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the philosopher Kansas.
Let one who is in desolation work to be in patience, which is contrary to the vexations which come to him, and let him think that he will soon be consoled, diligently using the means against such desolation as is said in the 6th rule. The 6th rule, just as a recap.
Yeah, that's okay. That's way easier said than done.
Yeah, so the 6th rule was do not make a change.
Right.
So you just be firm in your resolution.
Be patient. Like, when things are really bad, just be patient.
Right.
That's really tough.
So Father Gallagher, he says that patience is the virtue proper to persons undergoing a trial. That they do not flee the trial, but carry the burden faithfully, enduring the trial as long as it persists. The challenge here is that in the moment, patience is going to seem pointless. You know, if you are enduring something, especially desolation, you know, if it's a sickness or something else where you still have moments of consolation, you still feel close to Christ, it's easy to understand how the suffering that you're enduring is for a greater good. But in moments of desolation, when you don't have those feelings and you feel far from Christ, it makes you feel like this is pointless. Nothing good is coming from this.
Well, and this goes against like almost our human nature, right? Whenever we see something that's broken or like something is painful on us,
yeah.
Some kind of pain is attacking us. What do you want to do? You want to fix it? Like let's stop this.
Let's make a correction.
Let's get a correction going.
Yeah.
And like this kind of, so this goes against the grain of what you really want to be, like, what you want to be doing.
Yeah, and that's why the 6th rule is so important. Never make a change.
It's in desolation.
In desolation, moments of desolation. And, you know, once again, in that rule 6, never is an absolute term. He leaves no exceptions. Never make a change. So, for instance, if we've committed ourselves to a certain amount of prayer, and in a moment of desolation we're tempted to cut it short, which that happens
all the
time. Like, that's probably the most common temptation in desolation.
Mm-hmm.
We already know not to make a change and that we should complete our previous commitment. That's the rule 6. This one takes it another step because it describes the attitude that we continue to make that. You know, rule 6 tells us what to do. This is kind of how to do it.
Okay.
So we're going to do it with patience.
I mean, a lot of times I know that when I'm feeling down and stuff like that, I'm praying the rosary. It's like, okay, I got four decades done. I'm just going to cut it off.
Right.
I'm not going to get the 5th decade in.
Right.
I may try to do it later on in the day. Like, I just like tell myself, I'll do it later today.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I can't tell you how many times that, you know what? Oh, okay. I'm going to do my 20 minutes of prayer or, you know, whatever. I'll do it after this and I'll have a plan.
Right.
And then, but that's not my routine. And so when that moment comes, I don't think about it because I'm a routine person and it's the end of the day. And I realize I didn't pray today. Like, they got me again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very
easy
to do.
With those thoughts. We have actually done an episode on patience about, and you know, we talked about how patience is an active thing. It's not a passive thing. It's not something you just kind of like sit back, yeah, and let happen to you. You actually do patience. And that's exactly what St. Ignatius says here, that he says it is in this rule. He says, work to be patient.
Which is very hard.
Right. Sort of like the marathon runner who is running and getting tired from the miles he's already run, yet he continues to run. You don't stop running. You continue doing the thing that you are doing. Mm-hmm. Okay? And there's kind of patience in running a marathon. You can't just get it done. You have to continue to endure in order to complete the task. So, Father Timothy, he says, when we remain faithful to prayer, to service, and to our spiritual commitments, and to our calling in general, in spite of the urgings of spiritual desolation to admit defeat, we are working to remain patient. So that is the work. And that is what we're called to do, is to just simply continue. You might not feel like anything right. is being accomplished, but your feelings need to be rejected, because once again, you are in desolation. Mm-hmm. And the feelings and thoughts that come from desolation do not come from the Lord.
So just focus on what you've already taken on to do it well. Like, don't add more stuff, don't take things away, but what you've already committed to, what your vocation is, strive to do it well.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Commit to it even more, which is another rule, like to more penance, into some suitable form of penance, to more prayer, by petition asking it to be taken away. It's also no coincidence that this rule, the eighth rule, comes right after the seventh rule. This, as just as a recap, the seventh rule was, let he who is in desolation consider that he is being given trials for his own benefit and growth, and that it will soon be over. So that you can really see now how these rules build on each other.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so the ninth rule. Any questions about before we can
let okay. us proceed.
Very good. It is proper to do so. I like this rule. There are three principal causes for which we find ourselves desolate.
Okay, this is very interesting.
Yes. The first is because we are tepid, slothful, or negligent in our spiritual exercises. So the first reason is because maybe sin is, you know, another way to put it. And so our faults and through our faults,
or just rather, apathy. It's more
apathy.
It's
yeah,
more
sure.
Like, it's just more of almost. I mean, based off of what you just said, it's more of like being apathetic or being agnostic to just anything,
right?
Which is the devil's playground as well.
And obviously, mortal sin is. I mean, if you are in a state of mortal sin, then you should have zero expectation to be anything but in a state of desolation.
Just get to confession
because in this case, you have chosen to be removed from the grace of God.
Right.
You have put yourself there on purpose by committing a mortal sin. So, he says, negligence through our spiritual exercises. And so, through our faults, spiritual consolation withdraws from us. The second, to try us and see how much we are and how much we extend ourselves in his service and praise without so much payment of the consolations and increased graces. Okay? And the third is to give us true recognition and understanding so that we may interiorly feel that it is not ours to attain or maintain increased devotion, intense love, tears, or any other spiritual consolations, but that all is a gift and grace of God our Lord, and so that we may not build a nest in something belonging to another, raising our mind in some pride or vainglory, attributing to ourselves the devotion or the other parts of the spiritual consolation. So that one to me is, I thought that one was big. Like
it's all about humility, right?
Yeah, I've been there before where it's like I'm having like, I'm dedicating myself to prayer. Like I am, and it's very,
I've been in a state of grace for
right,
a long time.
Exactly. Like, man, I'm feeling it.
I am doing good.
Look at me.
Look at all that I'm accomplishing.
Right.
You know, that's so tempting. That is
yeah,
so tempting.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and then that's when humility comes in.
That's what you need. Exactly.
Yeah,
he's going to expound upon that more.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, to me, the third one is very, the first and the third one to me resonate heavily.
Uh-huh.
The second one is pretty like in natural sense, very obvious. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's lifted weights or done any kind of sports or music or instruments, you know, anything like that understands that, you know, it's going to be hard for a little while and then you gain, it's hard and then you gain, like,
Right.
That just is kind of a natural occurrence. And so it's easy to take the natural to the supernatural in understanding. The first and third one are more, to me, ones that are like, oh, man, this hit me in the gut. These are the gut punchers.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, everybody might resonate with these three in different
aspects,
ways. Yeah.
Sure.
And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what does he mean by cause? He says there are three principal causes which we find ourselves. We're not going to be breaking this down at a Thomistic level. We're not going to go that deep. But just what does he mean by cause? Because he doesn't necessarily mean
that God is inflicting it, but he's allowing it.
Right, exactly.
His permissive will.
Correct.
Okay, sweet. Thanks, Jim, for all your help. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Sipping on a little bit of beer this evening. Talking about, or putting a bow on last week's episode, The Discernment of Spirits. Talking about the ninth rule out of 14. We're 9 of 14. And we're talking about the cause for desolations. What Ignatius means when he says cause.
Correct.
For when people go into desolation, which I feel like I'm throwing, like, this is a big, like, I'm taking a big jump here, but I feel like there could be a plethora of people in desolation at this point.
Yeah, I'd say there's at least one or two.
So,
yeah.
It'd have to be at least, how many is it at least for a plethora?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, plenty. I mean, it's a lot. So, more than three.
I'm not sure that plethora has a numerical definition.
I don't think so.
I think it could be a relative
term.
Right.
Okay, let's throw that out. 15.
Okay.
Like 15? Juan says 15.
Like if you have a...
This is why we have Juan as a producer, because he's able to correct us on this on the go.
That's incredible that he just knows that kind of information.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking about causes. In the beginning, it says there are three principal causes for which we find ourselves desolate. So what does he mean here by cause?
Does he mean that God is just like inflicting this upon them?
No. He says that cause here does not indicate origin, or like the causing agent, but rather finality, the purpose for which the desolation is permitted to occur. So God is, he's about achieving the right end. He's about restoring us to whatever, you know.
Everything that God does is about the end.
Right. He either wants to achieve some sort of growth in us, or, you know, maybe conversion of heart, or...
I was reading something.
What's the word when you're sorry for something?
Sorrowful.
Yeah. Whatever it is when you're sorry for stuff.
I was reading Father Gary Gulagrange today, and he was talking about this exact topic. I don't want to get into it because I'll go down a rabbit hole.
He's such a funny name. Okay.
He's a great author.
I've never read any of his stuff. It's a memorable name.
He's seems like it's going to be my next Joseph Pieper. Is what it's
really
based off of what I've read thus far. Anyway,
I just think it's funny because it sounds like caribou.
Garibou.
Caribou.
Okay.
Your name rhymes with a deer. So it's important here to note that spiritual desolation of itself does not produce any growth. In fact, spiritual desolation is to be rejected. Okay? We don't embrace desolation. We reject it. Okay? We want to... once again, we're distinguishing spiritual desolation from the dark night of the soul. I'm not talking about the dark night of the soul. I'm not saying that you embrace the dark night of the soul. I'm just saying there's a difference between these two. Spiritual desolation is to be rejected. Because when we embrace it, once again, now we're taking counsel from the thoughts that come from desolation, which are not the Lord, is the enemy that counsels us in desolation.
That's interesting. That's...
Yes. So...
It goes against, like, my thoughts, but...
I know. Mine too.
Because I want to offer, like, this desolation up as a sacrifice to the
you
Lord.
You can, by being patient, but we're not embracing it. We're saying, no, this is not what I'm made for. I'm made for something else, but I will be patient in the moment. I will continue to do, but we are to seek the end of the desolation, not...
Yeah, like yeah, not die.
Right. Well, no. I mean, we are to believe that it will come, that God will bring it to an end very soon. That's one of the, I think that's like the fifth rule, or it's one of the other rules we did already. Okay. So once again, he's not saying that this is an exhaustive list. This is just three principal causes. And he says that there are three goals: conversion. Maybe that's the word I was trying to think of earlier. No, I said conversion. Anyway, the three goals of our Lord in these situations of desolation are conversion, spiritual learning, and humility.
Okay. Which goes, like, that's obvious. Like,
right.
Especially for the three reasons why. These are the three fruits of the reasons why. It
right.
makes sense.
So if we have, if it's because of our own tepidness, you know, the first way, the first principal cause, to me, this is just such a, it shows the love of God that he wouldn't just kind of abandon you to your sins, that mm-hmm. he would inflict this upon you in order that you would return to him. Because otherwise, you're just going to go along with a sinful habits, and who knows what your final destination will be. You know, like, if you allow even small sins a place to be cultivated in your soul,
mm-hmm.
they will soon
manifest,
grow into large, serious sins. Okay, so just the fact that God would allow us to suffer in this way is a beautiful, it's a beautiful grace. Okay, the desolation might be painful, but it would be worse if he didn't do it. Spiritual learning we receive is really the learning to resist the desolation itself. Okay, so there's a man by the name of Daniel Gill who has some commentary on Ignatius, the Ignatius rules here. He uses the example of a soldier, a patriot soldier versus a mercenary. Okay, so the second way was to try us to see how much we are and how much we extend ourselves in his service and praise without so much of the payment of consolation. So when you don't get the spiritual cookies, mm-hmm. are you still willing to serve him? Okay, so the mercenary and the patriot, when they stop being paid, the mercenary just gets out of there. The patriot stays because he believes
in the cause.
And he loves his country.
Mm-hmm.
Even though his country might not be paying him to be a soldier, right? Okay, so that's the kind of spiritual learning that he wants for us. And then finally,
by the way, when I used that example earlier about like lifting weights, I was meaning like whenever you hit lifting weights and you hit a plateau and like,
yeah.
but you keep going, mm-hmm. you know, to continue lifting because
okay.
you believe in what you know what you're doing, like what the end is, and so
yeah.
you keep going, and those plateaus end up, you know, go and continue growing.
Yeah,
up.
With persistence, you break through them.
Right. I just wanted to give that clarification.
I'm glad you did. I didn't realize that's what you meant.
Yeah. As you're reading that, I was like, man, I wasn't very clear there. I need to make sure that I
right.
cover that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So finally, God knows us, and he knows that we are likely to fall. So he allows desolation so that we do not think that we are the source
mm-hmm.
of our own consolation. Okay. We kind of talked about this already, that otherwise, you end up taking good things that you're doing and you're receiving consolations, and you miss
the fruits of it.
Right.
You miss the reasons why you get them.
You misapply the source. You think that you are the source, and you forget that God is the source. And so you start to believe in yourself and not him.
And that's so hard when God has given you gifts that where you excel in a specific aspect of your life that mm-hmm. other people don't. And so because of these natural gifts that have been given to you,
right.
that something that's like, I don't have to work for this. You know, this is just something that is just naturally given to me that apparently it's not given to everybody because everybody else is thinking that I'm doing a really good job with this.
Right.
And then you build onto like, well, that, you know, that I'm just good at this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, no, this is a gift from God
mm-hmm.
and he's given it to you so that you may glorify him, not for yourself.
Even if you say, look, I have worked, I've trained my whole life. I have worked thousands and thousands.
I put the 10,000 hours in.
That you haven't seen
right.
for me to be able to do what I'm doing now. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
And you deserve recognition for doing those things, putting in the work
mm-hmm.
To cultivate a gift that God has given you. But don't for one instant think that you did it yourself. You were given the ability
right.
to do it in the first place from God. So
that's a good
analogy, I think. The 10th rule.
Okay.
Let the one who is in consolation think how he will conduct himself in the desolation which will come after.
Yeah.
Taking new strength for that time.
I love this one. I love this one.
This is something you say a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
in the good times,
you prepare for the bad
times.
Prepare
for the bad times. That's
you
right.
know, like, in whatever your vices are.
You didn't even
are,
know you were quoting Ignatius.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Or he was quoting
He's
me.
He's always ripping off your stuff.
He does. He
I
does
know.
That. The thing about a lot of the saints is It seems like that they do that with us. But seriously, that is something that I actually got, I think, from Matt Fratt, or I'm not really sure who I got that from. But
yeah.
You know, whenever you, whatever vice you're struggling with, you're gonna feel like that. Okay, I've conquered. Now you're hitting pride again. I've conquered this. No. God, you know, this is a grace that God has given you. Nothing. Yeah. You know, you've just cooperated with God's grace. But you feel like I will never do that again. Mm-hmm. And then X amount of time goes by, and then you find yourself doing that exact same thing again. You're like, man, I can't believe I did that. Well, the reason why is because you haven't prepared for whenever like those temptations come, or what mood were you in? What was your mental state? Like,
right.
You know, all the things that lead you to that stuff. So you need to, when you are at your highs, when you are feeling good about like where you are just in life in general, you need to prepare for like, okay, where. This is a part about knowing thyself, right? Like we talked about in between those breaks, is knowing when you are going to fall, like knowing where are my weaknesses and what, and how am I, like, how could I possibly feed these weaknesses to make me fall?
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, to me, that 10th rule is huge. You know, when you're feeling consolation, when you're feeling close to God, make sure that you get on your P's and Q's, because now you have a target on your back, and the devil does not want you to be close to God.
Yeah.
And thus, there's going to be a lot of things thrown at you.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Adam, Ignatius would agree with you. Okay?
Interesting.
The whole purpose of these rules, it would be to become holy. That's really the whole purpose of this. But principally, he's doing this in order to train us to reject desolation. To, when we become desolate, to learn what needs to be learned as quickly as possible in order to return to a state of consolation, so that we might once again be counseled by the good spirits instead of the bad, instead of being tempted by the bad spirits. And so he also, we need to make clear that the purpose of consolation is not strictly to prepare for desolation. Okay, consolation is good in and of itself. It's not just utilitarian. Okay, so Father Gallagher says, our primary task in time of spiritual consolation always remains to accept the blessed work of God within us through such consolation. And remember that the good spirits counsel us more in moments of consolation. Consolation.
Yeah, hopefully it grows your relationship with God. It brings you closer to God, not necessarily for the euphoric sense of the consolation itself.
Right. And it should be enjoyed in and of itself, like just that moment of unity with God. Like, first of all, don't overcomplicate it. Then remember to think about the desolation that is likely to come in the future. And we'll wrap up. We'll wrap up the 10th rule when we get back.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about the discernment of spirits. We're talking about the 10th rule right now. I know I've said this before, but I just want to point out how practical this is. The 10th rule is, let one who is in consolation think how he will conduct himself in desolation. Okay, so he is being very specific. He's telling you, when you are being consoled, these are the thoughts that you should be having. I mean, it's like he couldn't be more specific here. Like, think about these things. And the reason he wants you to do that is because he understands the mechanics of the spiritual realm. And how, you know, people are influenced. He knows that when you are being consoled, you are being counseled, you are receiving the thoughts and the feelings from the goods from God. So those are the times to be thinking about, to be making plans for the future. Okay? These are the moments, that's what I just said, planning for the future. Okay. 10th rule questions, Adam?
None.
Okay. The 11th rule. Let one who is consoled, this is a big rule. Oh, I love this rule. And it's not because I make jokes about being humble. I just really do love this rule. Let one who is consoled seek to humble himself and lower himself as much as he can. Thinking, once again, he's telling us how to think here, thinking of how little he is capable in the time of desolation without such grace or consolation. On the contrary, let one who is in desolation think that he can do much with God's sufficient grace to resist all his enemies, taking strength in his Creator and Lord. So, once again, you can hear how he's telling you. He's literally just telling you what to do. These are the thoughts you should be having. It's like if somebody's telling you what to think, they're not really leaving much wiggle room. I mean, it's like it should be pretty easy to follow their instructions. Have these thoughts. Think about this.
Don't think about the pink elephant.
Right. I'm not. Ooh,
yeah. Exactly.
I did. So he gives us both the attitude and the manner. If we fail to humble ourselves in moments of consolation, we will quickly find ourselves back in desolation. Without the humility, we can be like Peter on Holy Thursday, okay, who, you know, quickly Jesus rebukes. So you can get a little you can get out ahead of yourself, and you end up failing and thinking that once again, I must be the source of consolation.
Right. Or like, you know, like him saying, like, I will die for you, Lord. And then that night goes ahead and like,
right,
rejects him.
Exactly. Right. So if we don't humble ourselves in that moment of consolation, lowering ourselves, then we won't be able to interpret the consolation the right way. And so if you notice here, he kind of brings together the last two rules about what to do, how to think. But this rule kind of puts the consolation, desolation in balance with each other. When you're in consolation, lower yourself. When you're in desolation, think about all the great things you can do with God's sufficient
grace.
The
virtue of magnanimity.
Right. Because he is still giving you sufficient grace. Okay. The 12th rule. This is a funny rule, I will tell you. It's not... we suffer from some political incorrectness here, which I get a kick out of, I think. The enemy acts like a woman in being weak when faced with strength, and strong when being faced with weakness. For as it is proper to a woman when she is fighting with some man to lose heart and to flee when the man confronts her firmly, and on the contrary, if the man begins to flee, losing heart, the anger, vengeance, and ferocity of the woman grow greatly and know no bounds. In the same way, it is proper to the enemy to weaken and lose heart, fleeing and ceasing his temptations when the person who is exercising himself in spiritual things confronts the temptations of the enemy firmly, doing what is diametrically opposed to them. And on the contrary, if the person who is exercising himself begins to be afraid and lose heart in suffering the temptations, there is no beast so fierce on the face of the earth as the enemy of human nature in following out his damnable intentions with such growing malice.
Yeah, so I listen to that, and I think it's, you're right, it is a little interesting. But I think this is the beauty of what the church gives us in the sacramentals and specific devotions for men. You know, yeah. Like wearing the scapular, wearing the the miraculous medal, having a devotion to St. Michael the Archangel, saying that prayer every single day,
right.
Developing a devotion to your guardian angel. Those are the kind of things that will build you up. To where it'll make the devil flee. Using the sacramentals of holy water, holy oils, holy salt, you know, to utilize that within your family and for yourself and in your spiritual life, that'll make the devil flee.
Yeah. No, you're right. And the church has been very clear about that, about the use of sacramentals in your life, and its ability to ward off temptation. I mean, it's not magic. That's
right.
It's just it's the will of God that,
and it's a beautiful
that He be present
gift.
To us in those physical ways, right?
It's a beautiful gift that the authority of the church has given the people in order to only grow them closer for the holiness.
I think that the basic, like the point he's trying to make here is that in moments of temptation, we must reject them immediately. Mm-hmm. If those temptations are allowed to linger, if we don't with firm disposition reject them the first time, they simply grow and become more and more powerful.
And this is like custody of the mind and custody of the eyes.
Yes.
Right? You know, how many times have guys, you know, just been like, oh, well, I'm just going to yahoo.com, and then, oh, I'm just clicking this article. Oh,
yes.
I'm just getting,
right.
I'm just looking at a sports article that ends up having a cheerleader, and then like,
I'm just going to see
what this is. And then like, and then it rolls into this snowball effect of sins that
I'm just going to, like, how about this line? I'm just going to click this to see if it actually is inappropriate.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Oh, it was.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought so. See, and it's like, I knew it. You know, right. Like, I mean, you have those moments where you kind of enjoy being tempted. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you just kind of, I'm not going to do it.
Right, but I'm not going to see.
I do kind of enjoy,
or the custody of
entertaining the idea.
Yeah.
I know I'm not going to.
Right, And the custody of the mind, like entertaining these like previous sins that you may have had, like and thinking about and almost glorifying them in your mind, like, oh, remember when I did that? That was so much fun. Remember when I partied with my friends so hard and I did that, or whatever it is, and you're glorifying these sins in your mind, and it leads to this corruption of mind, and you're thinking about things that are not the transcendental,
right? And that, because you're not rejecting them firmly,
right?
Which right is, off the bat.
Which is, you know, the snowball effect, right? It's like you get this little thing rolling.
You feed it.
And then you let it fester.
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden you're thinking, you know, it's been like 20 minutes and all of a sudden I've been thinking about something that has been completely inappropriate.
Right. Because your intellect is like your body. It's like, oh, if I have a rash or something like an infection, mm-hmm. and I don't treat it right away, it just gets worse.
Right.
You know, if you do that to your mind, it will also grow.
Right.
You need to heal it. I mean, you would never let an infection just like, yeah, I kind of like that infection. It's like, oh, it's a cool scar.
Or how about this? Somebody did something wrong to you and you're sitting there thinking about it over and over in your head for a long period of time. Then you see them again and they say something just kind of very normal, very like, just like, you know, I bet you had a good day today. It's like, why did he say that? I can't believe he said, I bet you had a good day. It's probably because he actually knows that I didn't have a good day because he said this to me. And it's like, That's not the case at all, but you just let these things...
That's a moment we need to stop and become myself reflecting upon myself.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, and that's something you have to train yourself to do.
So the enemy is weak when faced with strength and strong when faced with weakness. So he gives an example here. He says, when dedicated persons are firm in confronting temptations of the enemy, doing precisely the opposite of what the temptation suggests. For instance, why not let prayer go until later? Mm-hmm. No, I will pray right now as planned. You firm. It's like, no, I don't. I will not even entertain the idea. I firmly reject this notion with that kind of disposition. Then Ignatius says the enemy weakens, loses heart and ceases to tempt them. So actually, it terrifies the enemy and they flee based on your own strength in Not to say that you are the source of that strength, but that you have chosen to cooperate
with
that strength that you
with
have been
grace.
Given.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that.
He basically is telling us something that we know from spiritual warfare, that the enemy is essentially weak. The enemy, like the devil, is the weakest creature on the planet. He poses and roars loud. He's got a big he puts on a big show, okay? But at the end of the day, the enemy is nothing more than a barking dog on a chain. And it is the Lord who tells Satan and the evil spirits, "You may come this far and no further." Okay? They can do absolutely nothing to you apart from that which is God's will, and that which you choose to allow them to do. You know, so if you make the choice to commit a mortal sin, that opens up. I mean, there are consequences to your actions. Okay, you have empowered them. God would not have allowed them to do anything to you had you not cooperated. So, we need to know this and reject it right away. Okay, the 13th rule. Likewise, he conducts himself as a false lover. In wishing to remain secret, he's talking about the enemy. Yeah, he conducts himself as a false lover in wishing to remain secret and not be revealed. For a dissolute man who, speaking with evil intention, makes dishonorable advances to a daughter of a good father or to a wife of a good husband, wishes his words and persuasions to be secret. And the contrary displeases him very much. When the daughter reveals to her father or the wife to her husband his false words and depraved intentions, because he easily perceives that he will not be able to succeed with the undertaking begun. In the same way, the enemy of human nature brings his wiles and persuasions to the just soul. He wishes and desires that they be received and kept in secret. But when one reveals them to a good confessor or to another spiritual person who knows his deceits and malicious designs, it weighs on him very much, because he perceives that he will not be able to succeed with the malicious undertaking he has begun, since his manifest deceits have been revealed. A lot to say about this. This one's big for our show, about brotherhood, about having someone spiritual director.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this right now on the radio, go to thecatholicmanshow.com. You can check out the rest of our episode, or you can subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. We'll continue this on our podcast. We'll be right. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus. Okay, so it's not good for man to be alone.
We're made for communion.
We are made for communion. We are relational beings, so we need each other. One thing that you know, we talk about is that iron sharpens iron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you, we're not called to be hermits in most cases. The vocation of a hermit is very rare.
Right. Well, and like, you know, we hear this iron sharpens iron all the time, but you got to remember, and I've said this before, I'm sure, on the show, but iron only sharpens iron when it comes together.
Right.
When you sharpen iron...
It's not like, oh, just wave it.
You know,
close to each other.
They have to actually come together. The iron actually has to, you know,
they
come
have
in
to,
contact.
They and it's not just contact. They have to confront each other.
Mm-hmm.
They have to almost like challenge each other. I mean, it is a challenge. One iron colliding with another. One of them is going to win. The other one's going to lose. Maybe they both become sharper, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like, oh, let me help you in the same direction. In the analogy, they're going in opposite directions, okay? And that's important because when we find ourselves going in the wrong direction, and it is those moments that we need to make sure we've surrounded ourselves by people who know the direction. Other times, there are many times in your life other people can more easily perceive what is right and wrong in your own scenario much easier than you, because you're too close.
Right.
The enemy, this is part of what he's saying here, is that the enemy has the ability to influence your passions, your emotions. Okay, and emotions are not good for logical thinking. They're good for other things, but when it comes to accurately assessing a situation, those emotions can lead us to believe things that are not true. Okay, so that's when you need somebody. You have to pay close attention when St. Ignatius uses adjectives. Okay, so he says, reveals them to one's good confessor. Not simply when one's confessor, one's good confessor. And then or another spiritual person. So he immediately follows good confessor up with another spiritual person. So he's also implying that your good confessor is indeed a spiritual person.
Mm-hmm.
The thing here is that the enemy wants you to keep your struggles to yourself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his whole game is divide and conquer.
Exactly.
Right? He divides you, separates you, conquers you by saying, like, I'm the only one struggling with this. I'm the only person carrying this cross this way. I'm the only, like, my cross is, you know, is heavier than everybody else's. And so, like, it just follows you into despair.
Or maybe they've got their own problem. The last thing they need is my problems.
Is to listen to
I'm pretty busy.
I know they're busy.
Right. Yeah. They don't want to. The last thing that they need is to have to deal with my silly problems.
Right.
Because in that moment, they might be tempted to think your problems aren't as bad as
what some people are. Yeah.
And they wouldn't understand anyway. You know, they're going to think you're crazy if you bring this up. They won't want to be your friend.
The
excuses go on and on and on. And I love this chapter in the book because he talks about Saint Therese on the night before she was to take her final vows. She had never in her life doubted for an instant her vocation to the religious life until the night before her. And she said there she was in her cell, and all of a sudden became convinced that she had deceived herself and her superiors, that she saw very clearly that she did not have a vocation to the religious life. And so she went and found her superior. Actually, they were in like evening prayer. And since she hadn't taken her vows yet or something, she wasn't allowed into this certain area.
Mm-hmm.
She went in there anyway because she had to
talk to somebody.
She had to. Right. And so it was like an act of humility that she said, I will go and do this, even though it will be very embarrassing for me. Like, surely people would think, like,
yeah,
oh, Therese, like, she's like such a drama queen or something, right? And so, but in the story, the moment she brought it up to her superior, it instantly went away.
Well, I mean, how many times, I mean, we can relate to that. I mean, how many times have I called you late at night or something like that, worried about something or struggling with something,
yeah,
and just talking to you about it, I instantly, like, by the end of the conversation, I'm like, you know what, that was, like, that's not that big of a deal, or right, I'm not struggling with this as bad as what I thought I was, or you give good advice, or, you know, terrible, right, a lot of times terrible advice, and I end up being okay.
That is true.
But I'm not as culpable because of your right, terrible advice.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, you should know better, but I mean, it's you know, it's like it works out.
Right. But so, I mean, I think a lot of people get that. And you know what? Receiving those kind of phone calls actually is something that's good for the soul as well.
Yeah, because it, you do a, it's a spiritual work of mercy, you know, for your brother.
And just like being there for him. Like, right. You know, we have a mutual friend who's struggling right now. And every time he calls me, I'm like, yes, I'm glad he's calling. Like, yeah, good. I get to talk to him.
Uh-huh.
It feels good.
Mm-hmm.
So
the other thing that, a couple things that need to be clarified here is, what does Ignatius mean by a spiritual person? What does that mean? Okay,
because New Age, I believe.
Yeah, it's New Age, right. Yeah, they need to probably a yoga instructor.
Right.
Right. Because he doesn't mean holy. He doesn't mean a holy person. Ignatius clearly states that the word spiritual in this context does not signify simply a person of prayer and service. Such a person may or may not have the necessary knowledge and experience to assist the troubled person wisely. A confessor is spiritual if he is conversant with the workings of the enemy. One who knows, because he says here, one who knows his deceits and malicious designs. Okay, so St. Teresa of Avila actually goes through how to pick a good spiritual director in detail. And she actually says, let's say you have a very holy person and one who is not holy but knows the workings of the enemy. She says to not pick the holy.
Right.
Like, it's better to have a more sinful spiritual director who is knowledgeable about the workings of the evil one, because they can more accurately and acutely direct you through, oh, yes, I'm very familiar with that tactic of theirs. I know it very well.
You know, it's very interesting that that's the case.
Yes, right. Because some people are just naturally holy, and other people, we all have different gifts, right? You know what I'm saying?
Some of us, like me, are on the struggle bus constantly.
Yeah, and so it's like you notice who's absent from the list. He doesn't say a holy person, but he says a good confessor or spiritual, another spiritual person. Okay, so the 14th rule, this is The last rule. I like this rule. So these last three rules are kind of a subset. You notice it was, you know, the how does the enemy work when he's attacking you, tempting you, be strong. Then here it was, he's going to tell you to keep it secret. And now we'll see this 14th rule that, once again, referring to the evil one, likewise, he conducts himself as a leader, intent upon conquering and robbing what he desires. For just as a captain and leader of an army in the field, pitching his camp and exploring the fortifications and defenses of a stronghold, attacks it at its weakest point, in the same way, the enemy of human nature, roving about, looks in turn at our theological, cardinal, and moral virtues. And where he finds us weakest and in most need of our eternal salvation, there he attacks us and attempts to take us.
Yep, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's like, you don't... that seems obvious, right? Like, yeah, that's where I was... Obviously, if I was them, this is exactly where I would tempt me, because right, that's where I'm the weakest.
That's part of, like we've said this multiple times on the show, but knowing thyself, knowing where your weakest points are, right, when you're at your highest, you focus on some of the things that you struggle with in order to fortify yourself to when those attacks come, you have a strong defense.
Right. Now, notice what he doesn't say. He doesn't, in this metaphor, talk about how strong the attacker is. It doesn't matter. He simply is, it's about finding the weakness. You know, if you're a town with a wall around it,
mm-hmm,
are all parts of that wall...
Yeah, you know how the Great Wall of China got infiltrated?
How?
It wasn't because they broke through the wall.
How was it?
It was because they bribed the guards to let them in.
Oh, so you right. Know, there was, you go. You had a place where guards could be bribed.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was the weakest. It wasn't that the wall was too weak for the enemy. It was because they were they figured out a way to get in
right,
from the bribing the guards.
So we see that once again here is the beginning is where we start. Obviously, the beginning is a very good place to start. So
I like starting at the
beginning. Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Sometimes I don't like starting at the beginning. A lot of books, I don't start at the beginning.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
I do. I'm just that kind of guy.
Yeah.
So the battle will always start in this scenario at your weakest place. You know, it's not like they're going to say, you know what? That looks like a nice wall. Sure, I know there's like a wooden gate around the side. Let's start with the stone wall.
Mm-hmm.
See how it goes. That's never going to happen. So Ignatius says that, actually, I think this is Father Gallagher. People of discernment can prepare their resistance to these deceptions before the deception begins. They can learn where in their spiritual lives the enemy's deception will most likely occur and be prepared beforehand. You are as strong as your weakest link is essentially.
Goodbye.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye. So you might have perfect self-mastery in a lot of areas of your life, but if you have just a single weakness, the enemy will, it doesn't matter how strong you are in the other.
Just pick at it.
Right.
And has plenty of time. He plays the slow roll game.
Exactly. He's patient.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it doesn't matter how big and strong your wall is on one side if it's flimsy around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, once again, how he tells you exactly what you need to do. Examine your theological, cardinal, and moral virtues. That's a specific list of things.
Yes.
Okay. And then something that we've said on this podcast several times already, temet nosce. Know thyself. Do an honest assessment and look at what you should be looking for as a pattern of weakness. That you know, mm-hmm. This is where I struggle.
And where you struggle, like, in order to find that, a lot of times it's like, okay, what am I confessing every single month? Or hopefully you're going, I strongly advise men, if you're not going to confession every single month, to go at least once a month. That is something that I strongly suggest. If you're taking your prayer life seriously, if you're taking your spiritual life seriously, go to the sacrament of confession at least once a month.
Yeah, whether you need it or not.
You do need it.
You do need it.
Right. And then as you train yourself to go at least once a month, you realize, okay, what am I confessing?
Yeah.
Every time that I'm in here.
I should have said whether you have mortal sin, whether you've committed mortal sin or not. If you've committed mortal sin, you better not wait for I'm going to go at the end of the month.
No, run to confession immediately.
Yeah.
That's the benefit of having some priest friends on speed dial. You can call them up and be like, hey, I need confession.
Yeah. Get over here and I'll give you a beer.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, like I said, these last three go together. The 12th rule, resist at the start. The 13th rule, don't bear the burden alone. And the 14th rule, focus your energy where it's needed the most. This is important because, as Father Gallagher says, the ultimate refinement of discernment in this set of rules is reached when discerning persons become capable of defeating the enemy's personalized attacks even before the attack begins. Okay, because that is true. The enemy attacks you the way you would be attacked. He doesn't attack us all the same.
Right.
And so you need to be able to discern your own situation.
Mm-hmm. Situation.
Right. By dedicating, and when you do this, when you like find that weak link, it doesn't just strengthen that one virtue. You actually become stronger all the way around because
grow in one virtue, grow in all virtues.
All virtues, right? Imagine a town that's no longer being invaded. You know, like, you can really thrive now, okay? So, no one can discern your heart but you.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that you have to do. Even a good spiritual director or confessor cannot do the discernment for you. They can help you. They're invaluable in the discernment process. There's a lot of rules here. This podcast is in no way a replacement for reading this book. It's not even close. Okay. The understanding of these rules that Father Gallagher lays out in this book is so much deeper and more. You'll just have a better understanding. Just read the book.
I don't know, dude. I think we just articulate it way better.
I hear there's a movie coming out, so you could wait for that.
I'm just joking. Yeah.
In
conclusion,
the work is hard, but you're a man, so get used to it. You know,
get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Right. I mean, if you think that that's like, oh, that sounds really hard, I won't do it. Well, you're probably going to go to hell. So, like,
don't do that.
Just don't do that.
Because
I want you to go to heaven.
I want everybody to go to heaven.
I'm not judging you. I'm not saying you are going to go to hell. I'm just saying, like, That is a risk when you decide, I'm not going to.
When you don't take your spiritual life seriously.
Are there any cheat codes?
Right. There's no spiritual hacks.
Do you remember cheat codes?
Yes.
I don't even know if those are a thing anymore. Anyway, any other any questions? Any questions from the audience?
I didn't see it.
Okay.
Jim, are we good? Jim gives us a thumbs up.
All right.
I feel like that's sufficient. It's a delicious beer.
Yeah, fantastic.
I would like to have another one, to be honest with you, but
yeah,
it's okay. I'm good. I'm very content.
Me too. I still have a little bit.
Thanks, Juan, for all your help, buddy.
All right, let's shut her down.
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code REDBOX at checkout for 20% off at CatholicSingles.com.